Charity Mobile, as mentioned on LifeSite News and ranked by SecondVote.com, Charity Mobile is one of only 7 pro-life corporations nationwide and the only mobile phone company. More information at CharityMobile.com.
The following is a relevant radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
All the issues, all the topics, one place. From Maui to Maine, Phoenix to Philadelphia, and Eau Claire to the OC, this is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's funny how the country is so against the Wall Street executives, but then we just put another one in office here.
Hopefully he'll keep taxes low.
First off, not to be like a bully for jobs. He's going to raise taxes, but hopefully it goes to schools and for highways.
Anybody getting there nowadays not doing any good for New Jersey.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, good afternoon. It's about 5 after the hour. Hope you're doing good today. It's great to be here with you. It really is. Great to be here with you. Hey, big day last night, right? You're probably still politicked out. I know a lot of other people were. Maybe you're not following the elections as closely as I am or some others. I think what happened last night could be telling. Maybe not. We're going to speak to a couple experts about that coming up right now. But this year, of course, was an off year for major elections like Congress and the White House. But there were still some elections around the country yesterday that have had. I think they may have an impact on next year's midterm election. Now, the big news, and I'm sure you probably have already heard some of this, is that both New Jersey and Virginia, well, they elected Democrats for their governors. And very decisively. There were also kind of a number of firsts for minorities who were elected to state and city offices, including a couple of transgenders. There was a sick mayor in New Jersey, a lesbian mayor who and sick to religion. I should probably qualify that. You know, it's spelled S-I-K-H. You might remember the shooting that took place at that Sikh temple in Wisconsin, I think like a year or two ago. But anyway, there was a Sikh mayor in New Jersey. There was a lesbian mayor, really a gay man too, on the school board in Seattle, a black female mayor in Charlotte, North Carolina, and of course a black mayor in St. Paul, Minnesota. There was also an Asian American woman in the House of Delegates in Virginia. So the only congressional race was Utah, where Republican John Curtis was elected to replace Jason Chaffetz, who, of course, resigned earlier this year. Senator Dick Durbin, he was asked about this, and he's a senator from Illinois. He says this is a true victory for Democrats. And you know what? Republicans, they need to refocus their priorities.
If Gillespie had prevailed with his message, which really was a negative message, talking about illegal immigrants, talking about restoring and saving Confederate statues, where would we be this morning? This is about our country, and it's about the future of issues in Congress. I hope more Republicans got the message last night that Americans are looking for us to work together and solve problems. That's a good message and a timely one for Congress.
No doubt about that. There's some rejoicing on the Democratic side of the aisle. The DNC chairman, Tom Perez, he's celebrating the success as well.
Unity continues to be our greatest strength. We saw that in the Virginia primary. We had a spirited primary. We had a great debate. Organizing matters. This was the most extensive coordinated ground game in Virginia history, more extensive than any presidential.
So what's it mean? Huh? Are there strategies that are learned from this that will impact other midterm elections or even presidential elections? There's a lot of celebration in the mainstream media with claims that voters are rejecting what they're calling Trumpian politics. Ed Gillespie was the Republican candidate for the governor of in Virginia there, and he was expected to have a close race, or at least a closer one than he did. He ended up losing to Ralph Northam by, I think, 9 points. And Gillespie was branded as a racist by Northam's allies, and it seems to have worked, even though there's no evidence that he is. Of course, here to give us some perspective and offer you some analysis, and of course, you're welcome to join us anytime. He's Ed Morrissey. He's senior editor at HotAir.com. He's been following all of this very closely and is here to give us all some perspectives. Also, one of the great hosts here on the network. Hey, Ed, thank you for joining me once again. Always good to talk with you.
Drew, it's great to be back with you. Thank you.
So did you get your political fix, so to speak? I know a lot of people have disconnected since the presidential elections, but there's a lot of people who really enjoyed what went down, were following it closely, and are now commenting on what it might mean for the future. What did you make of what went down? Is it a reflection of Trumpian politics? Is it campaigning? What was it that we saw such diversity this time around?
Well, I think if it was just Trump, it would have only impacted the gubernatorial race in Virginia. Ed Gillespie, by the way, who almost won a Senate seat 3 years ago in Virginia and surprised people by how well he actually ended up doing, had tried to bridge, I guess what you would call the more establishment type of, the traditional type of Republican politics with the Trump politics, while still keeping Donald Trump sort of at, a little bit at arm's length. He didn't invite Trump to come to Virginia to campaign. They felt that was going to be a problem. And so this morning or late last night, the White House blamed Ed Gillespie for not completely embracing Donald Trump. But I think that the overall result in Virginia is much more about the Republican Party as a whole, including Donald Trump, but also including Congress and the lack of progress on any of their agenda so far this year. We're now in November. They haven't passed any of their major legislative agenda. They've fumbled entirely on Obamacare repeal, which they were pledging for 7 years. And tax reform is looking like it's going more or less down that same path, right? And so there's a great deal of frustration that the Republicans aren't really doing anything. And I think that's also part of what we saw yesterday. Virginia, Republicans had a 66-34 advantage going into the night in the House of Delegates.
Wow.
And I believe right now they're at a 51-49. And that's if a couple of remaining races break their way. They may end up out of the majority after having a wide majority just yesterday.
That's amazing. My guest today is Ed Morrissey from HotAir.com. You can follow him there. You can join him now, too. Feel free to call in at 888-914-9149. Let's take a few calls. Tim's listening in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi, Tim. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Yeah, Drew. I just want to comment that this was a pretty much of a must-win for Democrats. It was a blue state. They basically won on a really bad racist commercial where they had this guy, this conservative, driving after some illegals on a truck and trying to run them down, and that was really dirty politics.
Hmm.
I think this is more of a must-win for Democrats. If they had not won these two states, it was pretty much going to be a forecast of what's going to happen in November.
Right. Hey, Tim, thank you. And let's talk. He brings up a great point. Is this does this give us a window into future elections and really the pulse of the American people right now? Are things kind of swaying in the other direction? Are the polls, indicate that Trump's favorability is down somewhat. It's still very stable amongst his base, but some of those other possible swing votes, it's kind of moving away from him. How does this? What's this tell us about the temperature of the country and what it might mean in the future, Ed?
Well, I think this tells us more about the temperature of the electorate than, say, some of the special elections that we were looking at earlier in the year. This is a normally scheduled election, so Virginians and New Jersey, by the way, had a statewide election as well yesterday, which Republicans didn't expect to do well at all, and because of issues that are in New Jersey, specifically with Chris Christie, who was tremendously unpopular by the time this election rolled around. So they were expecting to lose in New Jersey. That was not a surprise. The depth of the loss in Virginia was very much a shock. Nobody expected the legislature to take such a pounding as it did yesterday. And I think that does tell us something about the tenor of the electorate, at least gives us a broad hint. Because, again, this was a regularly scheduled election. This was not a special election where turnout models are unusual. This is the type of thing that, Virginians do this every 4 years, just like every other state. They just happen to do it in off years, unlike 48 other states. And so you had all the normal turnout mechanisms in place. You had two candidates who were spending quite a bit of money, and you had ads. As the caller said, there was one really egregious ad, and it was actually not put out by the Democratic campaign, but by one of their one of the outside groups that were allied with Ralph Northam's campaign. That was the ad that was showing a Confederate flag bearing truck trying to run down children of color in the streets of Virginia. It was a terrible ad, absolutely horrible. Terrible ad, and even Northam's allies were decrying this ad, and rightfully so. But in the end, I don't think that really had much to do with it. It's not really the type of ad that's going to convince a whole lot of people, and there was some evidence from exit polling that it might have generated a little bit more of a counter response than a positive response. Yeah. However, you take a look at the way things turned out here, and I think that there's something really basic that Republicans in the White House, Republicans on Capitol Hill and the White House, have missed over the last several months, which is that they were able to win the last election by basically being very aggressive, very assertive, projecting an attitude. In fact, they pretty much won it on attitude, right? Mm-hmm. This is a candidate who fights, who's going to punch back. He punches back twice as hard. You know, he doesn't take media guff. And that's good for a short period of time. But once you're elected into office, you're expected to do something with that. And most people in America do not live their lives on social media where this type of thing is sort of the norm, you know, the punching back twice as hard thing. Most voters in Virginia, I was in Virginia a couple of years ago and interviewing people for my book, and most voters there and other places told me this the same thing. We don't really care about the ideological battles. Most voters aren't that invested in it. Yeah. What most voters want is to see their state legislatures, their local city councils, and Congress and the White House doing things, accomplishing things, making their lives better, creating policies or creating policies that improve their lives, getting rid of policies that impede their lives. That's what they expect to see. So when you spend 11 months basically spinning your wheels and fighting with each other and name-calling and not much else, I think that's what the real takeaway is here, is that people are frustrated that nothing is going on, nothing is being done about them. It's all about the politicians. It's all about taking pot shots at each other, and they're frankly sick and tired of it.
My guest today is Ed Morrissey. You can join the conversation, 888-914-9149. Donna Brazile, the former interim head of the DNC, believes the Democrats have picked up momentum. She forecasts that the best is yet to come.
This was a blue wave. This was not just the National Party invested in down ballot races. This was grassroots Democrats saying, I am taking back my city council. I am taking back my sheriff's seat. I am taking back my state delegate seat.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Your faith is at your fingertips.
The Relevant Radio app.
We all have access to the readings. They're right there on the Relevant Radio app. Just hit daily readings. You know, allow the Lord to speak to you through the readings and come together as a family, even if it's just to say your intentions at the end of the day, what you're praying for, how you want to thank God for working in your life.
The continuously updated Relevant Radio app.
Folks, don't miss downloading that wonderful new app. It's been a real blessing to me.
It's in your app store.
A Catechism Minute on Relevant Radio.
What is the Communion of Saints?
The Communion of Saints is really the Church. The Church is the family of God, and the communion that we have amongst each other because of our common communion in Christ.
When we talk about the Communion of Saints, Catechism talks about two meanings.
Well, first of all, communion in what is the holy. We have the communion in what is called sancta, holy things, the sacraments, which bring us into direct communion with Jesus Christ. And it's because of our union with Christ and our union with each other in Christ that we can also speak about communion of saints in the second sense, the sancti, in other words, communion among holy or blessed persons. So it's communion in holy things among holy persons.
Access an online copy of the Catechism anytime at relevantradio.com/cat.
One heart at a time.
Coming up on the next Inner Life, pilgrimages. They can be life-changing, and you don't have to go halfway around the world to make one. Father Wayne Watts will be our spiritual director.
Lourdes is the place where Christian charity comes to life, and those words struck a chord in my heart. It's an amazing place where great things happen.
I'm Chuck Neff, inviting you to join us for the next Inner Life, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on Relevant Radio.
The sacrament of marriage is vital to our Catholic faith. Catholic Match is a website for Catholic singles. To learn more and connect with other Catholic singles, CatholicMatch.com.
I have taken care of a lot of sick children over the years and their families, and nobody has ever asked me whether I'm a Republican or Democrat, nor have I asked them. It's going to take a doctor to heal our differences, to bring unity to our people. And I'm here to let you know that the doctor is in.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The doctor is in the house, huh? Takes a doctor to bring unity? That was, of course, doctor now turned governor himself, Ralph Northam. He was the winner of last night's race in Virginia. Thank our friends at CNN for that audio. Good afternoon. Welcome. If you want to join the conversation, I've got a few moments for you here. 888-914-9149. I'm speaking with longtime friend of the program, one of our great guest hosts and senior editor at hotair.com, Ed Morrissey, taking a look at the elections yesterday and what they might portend for the future here in the country. Let me just play a little bit more for you. Here's more of Northam and what he has promised to do. Listen to this.
This is about the Virginia way, and we have just a wonderful commonwealth, a tremendous amount of potential. And so I look forward to bringing people from both sides of the aisle together to move Virginia forward. We want to make sure that we continue to promote economic opportunity for all Virginians, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, science, technology, engineering, the arts, math, and healthcare, things like cybersecurity and unmanned aerial systems and artificial intelligence and biotechnology, data collection, data analysis.
All right. Welcome back, Ed. Great to have you back here with us, too. You heard some of the audio there. Democrats, especially minority Democrats, won a number of state House seats as well as, you know, mayoral and city council seats around the country. We saw what happened in New Jersey with the governor. There's talk that the Republican majority in the House is now in jeopardy. Apparently some polls are showing also that voters want Democrats rather than Republicans in general terms. A lot to talk about here. Let's pick up on Donna Brazile, and then we can also pick up on some of those points, and I'll grab a couple calls for you here. You were saying to me at the break, and I had to laugh a little bit about this, that they're kind of a little bit over their skis right now, you said, if they think they picked up momentum. You don't see this as a big momentum shift, do you? I mean, these are kind of blue states. Did you expect the things to go the way they would? And even in New Jersey, we know the history with Governor Christie. I mean, his lieutenant governor got beat pretty badly. What are your thoughts on the way things shook out?
Yeah, I think you're right about this, Drew. This was significant. This was not nothing. It is not also everything. New Jersey and Virginia are blue states. Hillary Clinton carried Virginia by 5.5 points last year. And Donald Trump never really seriously contended in Virginia. They thought he was going to, but he just never really seriously contended, mostly because of the strength of what's known as Northern Virginia or NOVA, which is seven or so counties around Washington, D.C., where there's a great deal of the population and a great deal of the political money comes from that. That's the federal contractors are sort of concentrated in those areas. And a little-known fact, or a little-discussed fact, it's known, is that two of the top ten wealthiest counties are in that area primarily because of the federal contracting that goes on there. New Jersey has always been a blue state. I think the last time that went Republican in a presidential election, was Ronald Reagan in 1984. And so it's always been a blue state. And the mayoral races that they're talking about and the city council races that they're talking about are primarily still within the urban core centers where Democrats have always dominated, have been dominating for decades in those areas. They dominated in those areas in 2016 and 2012 right. and so on and so on and so on. That's nothing new either. What is new and what should be concerning are some of the vote totals in Virginia that came out of the red congressional districts. If you go back and you try to put that together, and it's not easy to do, a couple of political analysts have done this and they've mapped it out a bit. It shows a couple of Republican congressional districts that are at risk next year, and that's just in one state. That's just in Virginia, and I think that that's something that Republicans are going to have to be very concerned about. But to say that they've achieved some sort of escape velocity from the worst position that their party has been in since Calvin Coolidge, and that's the literal reality of the Democratic Party. They have the worst position among state legislative seats, gubernatorial seats, and congressional seats than they've had in almost 100 years. It's going to take a lot of digging to get out of that hole, and this might be a start. Might also be a warning shot across the bow to Republicans that they're going to have to start getting things done in Congress and stop the infighting and start coming together on reasonable bills that achieve agenda items so that they can at least have an argument in 2018 that they belong in the majority for another 2 years.
Let's do this. We'll grab a couple quick calls. Phoenix, Arizona has been waiting for a while. Great to have you with us, Scott. Good afternoon.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just calling in. I was just calling in to speak about a lot of the points that actually just got brought up. Both of these states are blue states. I don't find these results too surprising or alarming. The other thing that I kind of wanted to hit on is I noticed I follow politics and periodically will be a guest on local radio shows here in Phoenix as well.
Okay.
So I follow politics pretty closely. And I felt going into 2016 elections that the majority of the country was tired of Democrats and rhinos, what I've dubbed as the lib neo-globalists. And I thought that we would see a very quiet and silent majority go to the polls, and that played out.
Mm-hmm.
I think now we will see a lot of rhinos and a lot of Democrats in purple or reddish areas get ousted in the primaries. And I think the majority of the country is going to send a wave of Americans to Congress in 2018 to fight for us and to fight for our country and our values and to continue to defeat the lib neo-globalists.
All right, Scott, thank you. Let me let Ed respond to you there. Your thoughts, Ed.
Well, I think that most voters probably don't align themselves in those categories. And again, Scott is somebody who's very active in politics. It's very clear. He's very well informed. He's active in politics. He talks about it, same as me. So I think that we come into the these discussions with very well developed sense of ideologies, right? And Scott has a pretty well developed point of view. I have a pretty well developed point of view, and I know you do as well, Drew. But we're among the vast minority of Americans who don't see politics as the main focus of their lives. And when you talk to people in these districts, again, all they really want out of politics is to make their lives better, either to get government to do things better or to do things less and let them do things better. And those are the people that you have to sell. And the only way that you can sell that is to actually have accomplishments when you come into an election. And we've seen this cycle before. We saw it in 2006 when Republicans had 4 years of single-party governance and reneged on their pledges to eliminate lobbyist influence, to shrink government, and they instead turned to Democrats, and Democrats ended up with control of both chambers of Congress in that election. The same thing happened in 2010 after the Obama administration, and Democrats got very extreme during their 2 years of single-party governance. Republicans took over the House. 4 years later, they took over the Senate. Now they're running into an issue here where they have single-party governance, but they're not getting anything accomplished, and voters are going to get very frustrated with that, and they're going to look to the other alternative. And that's, in our system, the other alternative is the other party.
Yeah.
And I think people who have a strong set of ideological convictions aren't necessarily susceptible to that, but they're minority. And the majority of people are just going to say, this guy didn't do anything for me. He's wasting my time. I'm going to go with the other guy.
All right. Ed, I want to thank you for your time. You know how this works. We're up against the clock here.
Yep.
Your website, hotair.com, best way to follow you. Your book, is that available? How can people get plugged into that?
Going Red, it's on Amazon. You can go to goingredbook.com. You can find all the links to the different places to order it. And hotair.com is where I write every single day. Thanks,
right.
Drew.
You and I will catch up again soon, I hope. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you, sir.
That's Ed Morrissey, folks. 15 minutes now before the top of the hour. I'm sorry. It's bottom of the hour. 15 seconds before I run out of time here. When we come back, we got a lot ahead. Stay with us. I'll talk Donald Trump and his warning to North Korea.
Prepare your family for the birth of Jesus with Countdown to Christmas, 24 days of the Jesse Tree tradition. This book provides short, daily readings and an ornament for your Jesse Tree from December 1st through Christmas Eve. Each reading tells a part of God's preparation for the birth of Jesus. By Christmas, your family will have relived salvation history from Adam to Jesus. Put Christ back in Christmas with Countdown to Christmas.
Buy your family's copy at jessetreebook.com. That's jessetreebook.com.
From the studio that brought you Miracles from Heaven and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs comes the star.
That light, that's the star. This is where it's been leading me.
We've come to honor the new king.
What's his name?
His name is Jesus.
Experience the family event of the holiday season.
Do you guys like frankincense? I never know what to get.
The Star. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. In theaters November 17th. For tickets and showtimes, go to thestarmovie.com.
Father Simon says,
let's go back to phone calls.
At the end of the day, we're all on Jesus' team. You know, it's kind of a team meeting every Sunday, and then you go out and execute your game plan.
We just have to pray this evening. Just have to keep praying, that's all.
It's important that all the team shows up for the team meeting because we find strength, and it means a lot to see the other people there, too.
Have a question about the faith or the church? Give Father a call.
If you like to listen, I like to talk.
Father Simon says, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Today, my Carmelite friends are celebrating the feast of one of their members who was canonized not too long ago. Her name is Sister Elizabeth of the Trinity, and she died in 1906. Hello, this is Father James Kubicki, director of the St. Francis Mission on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota, and I especially like this holy woman because she taught that God is very close to us, in fact, within us. After all, we are temples of the Holy Spirit, the Holy Trinity. This awareness helped St. Elizabeth of the Trinity in her sufferings. Shortly before her death, she wrote the following: in the light of eternity, the soul sees things as they really are. Oh, how empty is all that has not been done for God and with God. I beg you, mark everything with the seal of love. It alone endures. How serious life is. Each minute is given us in order to root us deeper in God, as St. Paul says, so that the resemblance to our divine model may be more striking, the union more intimate. I leave you my faith in the presence of God, of the God who is all love dwelling in our souls. I confide to you, it is this intimacy with Him within which has been the beautiful sun illuminating my life, making it already an anticipated heaven. It is what sustains me today in my suffering. I do not fear my weakness. It is that which gives me confidence, for the strong one is within me, and his power is almighty. He is able to do, says the Apostle Paul, abundantly more than we can hope for.
For more prayer resources, use the prayer tab on the Relevant Radio app.
Happy New Year! Not the one on December 31st, the one coming up in a few weeks, Advent. Tomorrow on Morning Air, hear how a busy mom is preparing her family to give and receive the spiritual gifts of Advent. Also tomorrow, the department stores have the Christmas decorations up, the Christmas movies are on television, so why not put up your lights? Tony Rossi from the Christophers in defense of Christmas decorations tomorrow at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific on Morning Air on Relevant Radio.
The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
There are a lot of people out there, you know them and you work with some of them, who might live in a really nice house, but they're poor because they don't know the truth. They don't even know that they don't know the truth. There's that kind of poverty as well. And they're trying to find this happiness that only God can give them. And they're looking for love in all the wrong places. Whereas St. Augustine said, Our hearts are restless, O Lord, until they rest in Thee.
The Patrick Madrid Show.
This problem that we have in our human condition, that we seek fulfillment, we seek happiness with all the things of the world, whether it's entertainment, whether it's gadgets, social media, food, those things will only carry you so far. And often, and especially when they're things that are contrary to God's will for us to be happy, they just lead us deeper into despair and misery. Giving alms is almost like handing somebody the key to the prison cell that he's trapped in and saying, here's a way out.
The Patrick Madrid Show, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Relevant Radio.
The regime has interpreted America's past restraint as weakness. This would be a fatal miscalculation. This is a very different administration.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, welcome back. Boy, I stayed up. I was watching the president's speech last night. I thought he hit a home run. I sent a tweet out to everybody while I was watching that. I thought it was very firm. The president clearly standing firm and aggressive in his fight, against nuclear warfare. The audio, and again, I would thank CNN for this, but you'll hear more of what he said in just a minute.
The regime has interpreted America's past restraint as weakness. This would be a fatal miscalculation. This is a very different administration than the United States has had in the past. Do not underestimate us, and do not try us. All responsible nations must join forces to isolate the brutal regime of North Korea, to deny it, and any form of it, you cannot support, you cannot supply, you cannot accept. We call on every nation, including China and Russia, to fully implement UN Security Council resolutions, downgrade diplomatic relations with the regime, and sever all ties of trade and technology. I also have come here to this peninsula to deliver a message directly to the leader of the North Korean dictatorship. The weapons you are acquiring are not making you safer. They are putting your regime in grave danger. North Korea is not the paradise your grandfather envisioned. It is a hell that no person deserves. Yet despite every crime you have committed against God and man, you are ready to offer, and we will do that, we will offer a path to a much better future. It begins with an end to the aggression of your regime, a stop to your development of ballistic missiles, and complete verifiable and total denuclearization.
Yeah, I loved it because it was very strong. The president again saying, hey, do not underestimate us, do not try us, that we would defend ourselves and our allies, but also offering hope, saying, hey, look, there is an alternative. There is prosperity and peace in your future, and we're still going to give you that opportunity. But we will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. We will not be intimidated. And we're not going to let the worst atrocities in history to be repeated here on this ground that we fought and died to secure, the president said. And I just thought it was very strong. I thought he was very clear. I think he's actually even getting better at delivering his speeches. You know, when he first started reading on the teleprompter, it was terrible. But if you had any notion that the current administration's, about our current position with North Korea, was anything like the previous administration's, President Trump blew that out of the water in that speech that he gave to the National Assembly of South Korea. He said, hey, this is a different administration. This is different. Don't test us. And, of course, he personally addressed Kim Jong-un, saying North Korea is not the paradise that your grandfather envisioned. Though that was a great line, too. This is not what your grandfather had envisioned. It's a hell that no one deserves. In a minute, I'm going to be joined by Greg Scarlett, too. He's going to be giving you some perspective on North Korea, really what it's like there, you know, how dark it truly is, and how the speech is probably being received. You know, the Washington Post noted that the speech was filled with words like twisted and sinister and tyrant and fascism and cult. It was a very different speech. It wasn't just a hellfire and brimstone speech. He offered the North, as I said, a way out, a path to a better future. And that's an interesting thing to say. You know, and in fact, one of the other lines here, and then we'll talk about it. You can join me here, too. He said, despite every crime you've committed against God and man, despite every crime you have committed against God and man, we will offer a path to a much better future. Don't you find that interesting? To hear a politician decrying crimes against God? You know, but that was certainly a great thing to say, especially against an atheistic regime like the North. I'm joined this afternoon for some analysis, some insight, and of course we'll take your calls too by Greg Scarlett too. He's executive director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. He's in London right now at the moment and is taking some time to join us. Greg, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Drew. The pleasure is all mine.
Boy, what were your thoughts? Or I should say good evening to you now. It's about 8 o'clock there, 9 o'clock?
Indeed. It's 20 minutes to 9 p.m.
Well, thank you for your time. What were your thoughts on the speech? I'm assuming you saw that. You know, one member of the assembly says he wanted to get up out of his seat and shout, Yahoo! You know, he was so excited. There were several times they all got up. They applauded. What were your thoughts on that speech?
My first thought was that on a scale of 1 to 10, President Trump scored a 100. It was the most comprehensive speech on Korean Peninsula issues ever given by an American president.
Wow.
President Trump offered an extraordinarily eloquent and accurate description of the success story of South Korea, a nation that has accomplished the miracle on the River Han, several decades of accelerated economic development, a nation that has also developed socially, politically, has become a true democracy, a role model for others in the region and beyond. The president mentioned South Korea's role as a responsible member of the international community, involved in international development and humanitarian operations, involved in peacekeeping operations. He made the clear distinction between the South, a free, prosperous, democratic economic powerhouse, and the North. And the use of the nouns cult and tyranny is surely very appropriate when describing the Kim regime. The president also offered a very comprehensive overview of the nature of the Kim family cult, the Kim family regime in North Korea, which is absolutely tyrannical, of course. He visited many of the critical elements that one has to understand in order to grasp the true nature of the Kim regime. He mentioned the human rights atrocities being perpetrated in North Korea, in particular atrocities being, for example, perpetrated against women forcibly repatriated from China. He mentioned some of those worst atrocities, infanticide, forced abortions. Very importantly, he also mentioned North Korea's loyalty-based Songbun system of social classification. This is a country that discriminates against its own citizens based on their perceived loyalty to the regime. The president mentioned the camps. Most importantly, and I found that as perhaps one of the key points that he made, he stated very clearly that a free, prosperous, democratic, a powerhouse, South Korea, is viewed as a threat by the North Korean regime. Indeed, it's survival that the regime truly wants, but there is just one competitor. This is an absolute political monopoly inside the country. There is just one competitor, and that is South Korea.
Well, yeah, I loved when he compared the North to the South and how economically they've grown. They started about the same place in 1954, in the mid-1950s, he said, and he showed how their economy is, what, 40 times greater now than the North's?
Indeed, 40 times greater now, yes.
That to me was absolutely amazing. And even people willing to sell themselves into slavery to avoid living in the North, it is a dark, country. There's tremendous oppression. And I thought the president's message was clear. What did you make of his statement? He says, hey, look, and I think he wanted to send a very clear message both to Kim Jong-un, but also to the world, that this is not any previous administration. You know, and if I was the leader of another country, and I've often said this, this Donald Trump, I would not want to necessarily test him, because I do think that he might be willing to respond with a big stick. What are your thoughts on some of the things that he said in terms, right now there are the U.S. has three carrier strike groups around the Korean Peninsula. And I'm sure that in and of itself is a message to Kim Jong-un. But how do you think his message is being received both by the leader of the North and some of its allies?
This is a U.S. president who projects strength. The language of strength is the language that tyrants such as the Kims understand. This regime is criminal. As we know, there was a February 2014 report by UN Commission of Inquiry that found that many of the atrocities committed against the people of North Korea and against foreign nationals as well, and President Trump did mention the abductions, many of these atrocities amount to crimes against humanity. This is a regime that's criminal but not suicidal. They understand the language of strength, and President Trump addressed the application of all elements of national power. It is very important to apply military power by reinforcing our commitment to our allies, in particular to South Korea and Japan, and this is precisely what he did at the National Assembly in Seoul. He reminded the audience of the strength of the American military, the strength of the U.S.-South Korea alliance, and the strength of our commitment to the alliance we have with South Korea. He also urged other members of the international community, in particular Russia and China, to join in efforts to persuade the Kim regime to abandon its nuclear and missile programs through the application of economic power based on UN Security Council resolutions. And of course, since diplomacy is also an important element of national power, he even left the door open for diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I think that was a great doorway. And he said, hey, regardless of what you've done, look, there is a future for your country where you'll find peace and prosperity. And I think that's fantastic. But he left, look, nuclear weapons are not an option for the North, period. And I got the sense from this particular speech that if Kim Jong-un does not take the pathway of peace and prosperity and begin to dialogue and de-escalate and have verifiable checks and get rid of his weapons, then the U.S. is probably going to go in and take them out. And again, I can't speak authoritatively on that. Your thought on that? Do you think if Kim Jong-un rejects this, because he sees this as security for his regime, yet the president made it very clear, this is not securing your regime, this is threatening your future and your regime. But I do think that there'll be some tactical strikes that go in there and take out those weapons. But your thoughts?
When the president states that we have deployed three aircraft carriers to the region, his intention is not to provoke a war. His intention is to prevent a war, again, by projecting confidence in our sheer military strength and the strength of our alliances. The dilemma here is that half of South Korea's population, 25 out of 50 million, live in Seoul and the satellite cities. One might as well say that South Korea is more than just a staunch friend, ally, and partner. One might see South Korea as the homeland. There are more Americans living in South Korea than in Buffalo, New York.
Wow.
Seoul is within reach from 700 long-range artillery pieces. The North Koreans have 10,000 artillery pieces lined up along the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. 1,000 ballistic missiles are ready to strike targets in the south and elsewhere. The majority, 80% of the 1.2 million men and women in uniform in the Korean People's Army, the North Korean Army, are forward deployed close to the front line. 400,000 light infantry are ready to pour down south with very little, if any, notice. 100,000 special forces are ready to infiltrate South Korea. Of course, the North Koreans have their nuclear and ballistic missile program, and they also have humongous amounts of other weapons of mass destruction, biological weapons, chemical weapons. Yeah. By the way, in February this year, the half-brother of the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-nam, was assassinated at a busy international airport in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, with a weapon of mass destruction, VX nerve agent, VX binary nerve agent. So we're, of course, aware of the potentially tremendous cost of a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. North Korean military planners do not have the capability to anticipate the rate or scale of escalation. They're likely to interpret any military strike, including a surgical strike, as the first step in a campaign to basically bring down the regime by force, and they would be very likely to initiate their own campaign in an attempt to establish hegemony over the Korean Peninsula.
My guest today is Greg Scarlato, and if you want to join us, toll free, 888-914-9149. He's Executive Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. We're taking a look at the president's address and what it might mean for the peninsula. And I'm curious as to how the South is responding to this. What do they think of the U.S. position on this, the language you're speaking, and our increased military presence?
Drew, did you address that to me?
Yes, that's to you, Greg.
And was that about China or North Korea?
That was about North Korea. It's about South Korea. How are South Koreans responding to the president's language, to our U.S. presence, and the threat of going into the North? Because as you just pointed out, look, if we were to go in and do some surgical strikes, take out some of his weapons, he could very easily unleash on the South, taking out who knows how many millions of lives. How are the people of South Korea responding to this threat?
Well, the people of South Korea have lived with the overwhelming threat posed by the sheer mass and proximity of the North Korean military for decades. They don't wake up every morning worrying that the North Koreans might invade. They go about with their own lives. As the president pointed out, this is a very successful nation. These are very successful people. This is a highly competitive society. This is a high-paced, very competitive society. So basically, they go about with their lives. But under the current circumstances, given that the Kim Jong-un regime has dramatically accelerated both its nuclear and missile program, South Koreans are surely more worried than they would usually be. And again, this is due to the acceleration of these programs and the bellicose rhetoric coming from the North. Basically, 4 out of 6 nuclear tests so far have happened on Kim Jong-un's watch. And I haven't checked the exact number in a few weeks, but since April of 1984, they've had about 125 missile launches. More than 100 of those have happened on Kim Jong-un's watch.
All right. Well, Greg, I'll tell you what. I want to also just put a big plug in for what you do. Committee for Human Rights in North Korea. The website is HRNK. That's Human Rights in North Korea, HRNK.org. It's a 501c3. And, of course, that means your donations are tax deductible to that organization. What do you do very quickly in case people want to know? Because, look, I've been following Korea and especially the atrocities in the North for a very long time. I've researched the death camps in the area, the horror of how the people there are being treated. In fact, we're continuing to hear reports even today that the mountains where the North has been conducting their nuclear tests, they're experiencing what they're called mountain fatigue, that more than about 80% of the vegetation is gone. People who live in the area are getting poisoned by radiation, and there's all sorts of other atrocities that are taking place in the North. Some perspective on what you do and just how people can help.
Drew, we do what the Kim regime fears the most. We find out and tell the truth about North Korea's human rights violations. We're the organization that monitors the North Korean political prison camps and other facilities. We use satellite imagery, escapee testimony, defector testimony, testimony from those who used to be prisoners, those who used to be guards, those who used to be officials in charge of running this camps. We look at other detention facilities. We look at the dynamics of the Kim Jong-un regime. We look at issues such as the terrible ordeal faced by North Korean refugees as they attempt to escape from North Korea. We were the first ones to publish a major English language study on Songbun, North Korea's social classification system mentioned by the president in his speech. The author of this major study was Robert Collins, one of our senior advisors and authors. Just a couple of weeks ago, we published a new report by David Hawke, Parallel Gulag, which offers unprecedented insight into North Korea's re-education through labor camps. On Monday next week, we will be launching a report entitled Cradle to Grave, again by Robert Collins, which examines the chain of command and control, control of North Korea's policy of human rights denial that results in many people ending up as political prisoners dying at this camp, so the death rates are very high.
Yeah, I'll have to have you back to give people a real look at what happens, you know, in North Korea in those death camps and other places, but I got to leave it right there. HRNK.org is the website, and Greg, I want to thank you for your time. I know it's getting late there in London. Enjoy your time there, and hopefully we can catch up soon, okay?
Great talking to you.
Thank you.
Thank
That's
you.
Greg Scarlatou, the Executive Director of the Committee for Human Rights in North America.
It's the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Prayed coast to coast, moments away on Relevant Radio.
Happy New Year! Not the one on December 31st, the one coming up in a few weeks, Advent. Tomorrow on Morning Air, hear how a busy mom is preparing her family to give and receive the spiritual gifts of Advent. Also tomorrow, the department stores have the Christmas decorations up, the Christmas movies are on television, so why not put up your lights? Tony Rossi from the Christophers in defense of Christmas decorations tomorrow at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific on Morning Air on Relevant Radio.
How has Relevant Radio impacted your family?
I am very confident that without Relevant Radio, we would not be Catholic missionaries today. We may not be Catholic today as a family. Relevant Radio was a major influence in my life. I found Relevant Radio by accident when I was 17 years old. I believe it was the first year Relevant Radio was even on the air, and continued to listen ever since then. Whenever I would drive to and from school, all the way through college, and it was always a beacon of light in my life. And much of what I learned on Relevant Radio, we now share in the mission today, in many of our teachings and catechesis classes that we use.
Relevant Radio is listener-supported radio. Make a recurring gift now of $10 or more each month through automatic deductions from your credit card, debit card, or bank account with no specified end date. Recurring gift partners provide a stable, continuous source of income for Relevant Radio, helping to reduce both expense and dependency on pledge drives. Join our St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society today at relevantradio.com/gift.
I love hearing from you and speaking with you.
Heart to Heart with Mother Miriam.
We need to be open to God. We need to trust that He loves us.
Heart to Heart with Mother Miriam.
The Bible's about us and mankind, and it's a love letter from God and how we could become all that God has made us to be.
Heart to Heart with Mother Miriam. Encouragement, insight, and solutions to life's struggles and challenges. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Relevant Radio. Talk radio for Catholic life.
The Relevant Radio toll-free studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forrester.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, just a minute or two before we pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. If you, as I like to say, have a need or a real, you know, need for prayer support, especially, you can give us a call, 888-914-9149. We'll take your prayer intentions. And every day around this time, we pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, a prayer given to the first saint of the new millennium, Sister Faustina Kowalska. She was a great recipient of this message of divine mercy, and one of the great, not just mystics and visionaries, but I think she's one of the great, great saints of the 20th century. That was an anointed time. And you take a look at the saints who lived together, were contemporaries, Maximilian Kolbe, St. Faustina, John Paul II. You had Mother Teresa. We had so many, Padre Pio, so many great saints that came out of there. The Lord reached out to her. He gave her this incredible prayer and asked us to pray, especially at this time. So we're going to pray when I return, okay? And we'll take your calls and all your intentions. Let's pray for one another. All right? Stay with me.